do. Okay? What kind of trials? What is suffering? We're going to talk about three different types of suffering today. The first, sometimes we suffer because of things we've done to ourselves, right? Someone who goes out, gets drunk, and runs into somebody, or runs into a tree, hurts himself. That suffering that I may have because of something I've done to myself. We're not talking about that kind of suffering today. God gets no glory in that kind of suffering. But there's two other kind of sufferings that can happen that we will be talking about today. And we'll see many examples in the scriptures of people who suffered just like it. And who did it the right way. And hopefully after we've studied the ones who did it the right way, it may help us to go about doing it the right way as well. The second of these groupings is people who suffer hardship or trials through no error of their own. I'm simply going down the road and the brakes on my car goes out and I hit a tree. And maybe I'm paralyzed and I will spend the rest of my life in a wheelchair. I didn't sin in that case. Okay? I didn't do anything wrong. But something horrible has happened to me and I may have consequences to suffer for the rest of my life. Bring this back to Paul. Paul had an affliction in the flesh, right? We believe it to be his eyesight. We know at least his eyesight was a suffering that he had. And it was something that he suffered for the rest of life through a sin of his own? No. It was just a, you know, probably a genetic disease of some type. And there's another suffering, and it's probably where we're going to spend the most of our time today, and that is I'm suffering because I take a stand for Christ, and Satan is using whoever else is there and around us in order to punish me, in order to make me suffer. Why? Because Satan wants you to fail. We spent a lot of time last year talking about Satan, the great roaring lion that's going from place to place, seeking whom he may destroy. He wants to destroy you. And believe me, suffering, he makes many people quit every day through trials, through suffering. I think of all the verses and all the passages in the scripture, there's one that is extremely humbling to me because in Matthew chapter 10, you've got the sower that goes out, and he sows the seed. And you have the seed that falls on the good soil. You have the seed that falls on the bad soil. Then you have the seed that falls on the soil that, on the soil, and then the cares of this life grow up and do what to it? Choke it out. Very good. The cares of this life choke it out. Well, let me tell you, one of the cares of this life that will choke you out is that of trials and suffering, especially if it ends up being something long-term. So, when we're talking today, it is about we will suffer. It's not about can we get out of suffering. We will suffer. We have programmed ourselves as parents. We programmed ourselves as parents to do everything we can to make sure that Will doesn't suffer. Right? So, to the point sometimes we may even try to put bubble wrap around Will when he goes out and about and he's playing on the playground. Little Will, when he was much younger. So that he doesn't hurt himself. So that he doesn't suffer. But that has grown up. Right now, Will's grown up, and now Will's in high school, and Will gets in trouble in high school, and the teacher or the parent or the principal starts trying to do something about it, and the next thing you know, here comes Mom and Dad trying to protect Will. Well, Will's going to suffer. Quit picking on Will. A few years ago, I had a new employee. It's been several years ago now, but I had a new employee come in. He said, okay, I'm here, now I want to take vacation time. You don't have any vacation time. It wasn't too much longer after that, I get to pick up a phone, and his mother is calling me. This is a professional job. Little Johnny didn't have any vacation time. He still wanted to take his vacation. Little Johnny heard the word no, and Mom is calling little Johnny's boss. I have to say, it took me a second to catch on and say, did that really just happen? So let me go ahead and tell you, you're getting out of college, you're going to the workforce. If you have a situation at work and Mom is sending a call, stop her. Okay, go ahead. Don't let Mom call your boss for you. That is not a good impression. But we spend our time trying to protect our children. But you know what? There's sometimes that we can't protect our children. There's sometimes we should protect our children. Will you suffer? Yes, you will suffer. And what we're going to talk about today is not will you suffer, because we know we will. But how will you face that suffering? How will we suffer? First Peter. And if you get your notebooks out, we do not have time in this class time for everything that we're going to talk about today. So, in the way of reference, I want you to write three references on your paper. First, the book of 1 Peter. If you are in hardship or you're suffering for something, especially something that someone else is doing to you, 1 Peter. Okay? So, flashlight question. I'm suffering, 1 Peter. Turn there. Get to know that book. Philippians. Paul spends a lot of time in the book of Philippians about the suffering that he's going through, of what happened to him. And 2 Corinthians also, there is a lot in those three books. So if you are suffering, if you are having a hard time, now granted, there's a lot in the Psalms, there's a lot in Proverbs, there's a lot in Job. But those three, we don't have time to read the whole books today, but we probably could, especially certain chapters within those books. Those books give us an idea into how to suffer. But in 1 Peter chapter 4, verses 13 and 14, but rejoice to the Lord to the extent that you partake in Christ's suffering, that when his glory is revealed, you may also be glad with an exceeding joy if you are reproached for the name of Christ. Blessed are you, for the spirit of glory of God rests upon you. And on their part, he is blasphemed, but on your part, he is glorified. This is the key to what we're here today to talk about. When we are suffering, when we are persecuted, we have two choices. We can try to put ourselves up on a pedestal and say, oh, woe is me, and maybe mom calls and tries to get me out of that trouble. Or we can take that suffering, and when we take that suffering, we take that persecution in the way we take it. Just suffering doesn't help. But the way that we suffer, the way we respond to the suffering that's going on, we can either glorify God, or we can put ourselves up on a pedestal. And we'll talk about that more in just a minute. Now, notice in Matthew chapter 5, in verse 10 through 12. Blessed are those who partake of persecution. Blessed are those who are persecuted for righteousness' sake. For theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Blessed are you when you are reviled and persecuted and say all kind of evil things against you falsely for my sake. Rejoice and be exceedingly glad, for great is your reward in heaven. For they also persecuted the prophets who were above you. Now, if I was to ask you, before we turn this PowerPoint on, I was to ask you, how many times have you been persecuted? How many of you, the last time that you was persecuted, was happy about it? What about exceedingly glad? Right? This is where it starts coming into, there's the book exercise that we're talking about. And then there's life. Then there's, it's me being persecuted. It's me having to get the strength to stand up and stand up to the professor. It's me having to have the strength to stand up to the boss at work and say, I can't be a part of that. And maybe get a zero on a paper, maybe lose a job, maybe whatever it happens to be. But if I'm persecuted for Christ's sake, be exceedingly glad and be joyful. Do you see how hard that sounds? Any masters? Looking for hands. I can't put my hand up. I'm not a master at this. The more I've studied this, the harder this has sounded to me. But really, we are talking about rejoice when you're able to suffer. We're going to see people throughout the Bible that did just that. They suffered for Christ, and they went away happy. Read the book of Acts. They went away happy, and they rejoiced because they were counted worthy to suffer. Am I? Are you? That's the question to ask yourself today, is how much do you need this material? And if you're like me, you need it a lot. And at the end of the day, the next time you're challenged, was I able to rejoice in the fact that I was suffering? So look, to kick this off, let's think about a couple of characters. And they're going to set the stage for the study today. The first one I want to ask you about is Stephen, chapter 6 and chapter 7 of the book of Acts. In Acts chapter 6 and 7, we have this man Stephen, and he is debating with the Pharisees and the Jews and the high priest. And there's this problem. The more they try to confound him, the more they try to trap him, his wisdom shows through. His wisdom is from God. He's filled with the Holy Spirit. And he answers them. And this is a debate that's going all wrong for them. They are getting madder. And they begin to gnash at him with their teeth. They begin to persecute him. They arrest him. They call him up on trial. And somebody look in chapter 6 and verse 15. What is said of his face? It looks like what? Face of the angel. Someone give me some characteristics. What does the face of an angel look like? Is it scared or peaceful? You think an angel looks scared? Angel knows who's in control. Angel probably has more power than anybody here on earth, so angel is not going to be scared. So I would say the face of the angel is going to be a pretty peaceful look. How many times have you stood before a judge? And hopefully doubt any of you have. But how many times have you been in trouble, stood before your parents? How many times have you been in trouble, stood before a principal? And you stood there with a constant look of peace. Right? Maybe even a smile. Not a, don't try that with your principal. That look of, hey, look, I'm smiling at you. I don't care what you're saying to me. That might be taken as a sign of disrespect. But you're in trouble. And this smile, this peace that's upon you. And a power, basically it's a, God's in control. He's got this. You think people noticed? Notice the difference in him standing on trial with the look of the face of an angel and him standing on trial, scared, begging for his life. Right? That's what most people do. And after he's taken and after he is at the end of it, he has been beaten. We know the story that he's taken out and he's stoned. And right before he is stoned, he looks up to heaven, the heavens part, and he says, I see the glory of God. And there is Jesus standing at the right hand of God. And with this, they begin to stop up their ears. They gnash at him with their teeth. I don't exactly know what they did to gnash at him with their teeth, but I'm telling you, it was not a good thing. And they take him out. They drag him out of the city, and they begin to stone him. So think of yourself now as Stephen. What was his last words when he's being persecuted? Father, forgive them. Father, forgive them. Now, put yourself in Stephen's position for just a moment. Can you utter those words? You're being drugged out. Now, here, they begin to throw the stones. The first, the big one, right? You're being stoned. Put yourself there. Can you at the end of this say, Father, forgive me? Right? Now you see why I'm saying this is hard. This is not easy stuff. Now the second kind of suffering that we've talked about, that we're going to talk about today, is Paul on the shipwreck. Paul do anything wrong when he's put on the ship? No. Is he even there by choice? Did he say, hey, I want to go to Rome today, therefore I'm going to get on a boat and go to Rome? He was, when in chapter 27, why was Paul on that ship anyway? See, I like a lot of questions right after lunch. He's a prisoner. That's right. He's going to Rome. One, he did say, I appeal to Caesar, but he's going to Rome because he's been arrested. So, again, this is the person who's going down the road, the brakes go out. He's done nothing wrong to be in the situation that he is in. But is he going to suffer? Yes, if you turn to chapter 27, 19 through 25, and then 33 through 36. While he is on this shipwreck, the waves are beginning to beat, the ship is falling apart, people are putting ropes around the ship to try to hold the thing together. Everybody is in a panic. It comes to the point to where it said at one point that all hope had been lost. Now, what's Paul's conduct? Again, kind of the face of an angel. Was he panicked? Was he scared? No. He had been given a promise by God. He told the people, after 14 days, he said, calm down. Don't be afraid. God appeared to me in a vision, and he told me, not only, he had already told me that I'm going to Rome. Paul knew when he got on the ship, he was not going to die on the ship. He had been promised by God he was going to Rome. Just like Abraham had been promised to God, promised that all the seed would be fulfilled through Isaac. Paul knew. He had a promise. He knew. He was going to stand before Caesar in Rome. But Paul now has been told a second fact, that all the people that are on the ship with you, they're not going to perish either. You're all going to live. 200 plus people, I think it was either 246 or 264. I get dyslexic sometimes. But 200 plus people are on this ship. And God tells Paul tells everyone, calm down. It's okay. Don't be afraid. God has told me in a vision that we're all, the ship's going to be lost, but we're going to save our life. Now, to kind of put this in perspective, picture you're at 30,000 feet and a plane is going down. And in this one little seat over here, there's a calm individual. Right? I don't know that I've never been on a violent sea. That's why I relate it back to an airplane. But think about the seas throwing ship about. People are throwing cargo off the ship to make it light enough so that they don't die. All hope is lost. We're all going to die. And then in the middle of this, one person stands up and says, don't be afraid. 14 days of this.
Don't be afraid.
Do you think Paul stood out? Do you think Paul standing there in this midst of absolute chaos stood out? Did he do anything to deserve to be there? No. But when he stood there amongst them and says, calm down. Now, people at the time that he said calm down probably thought Paul was what? All hope was lost. This man is a lunatic. There is no way we're getting out of this. What about after they've all gotten up on shore at Malta? Now, what are they beginning to say about Paul? Paul didn't take any of that glory himself. God has told me. Now, let's come back to this. When we suffer, can we be glad? Exceedingly glad. Hard concept? Yes. Can you do it? Yes. Hebrews chapter 12, that great cloud of witnesses before you has done it. And you can do it as well. One of the reasons I think this is so important for you guys is because I think you're going to face it. Right? You're going to face it more than I did. The workforce is getting harder. If you manage people in the workforce, it's going to get harder to be a Christian and make godly decisions and not lose your job because you didn't bend to whatever the political norm is at the moment. But what I want us to think about, we're going to come back to that thought in just a minute. It's not just suffering, though. And one of the points I want us to make very clear, it's not just suffering. We'll all suffer. But it's how we suffer. As you think through, and if you do a mental survey of the book of Acts, how many times when Peter and John was arrested, did they call their attention to themselves, it's not fair that I'm here. This just is not fair. Look at how you're treating me. How many times did Paul say, this isn't fair, look who I am. I'm one of you. I was educated by Gamaliel. Look at who I am. It's not fair that you're treating me. You won't find that any of these times that Peter called attention to himself. You won't find the Paul calling attention to himself that I can think of. Now, he used his Roman citizenship to work the system. But he did not call attention to himself. Where did the attention go? The attention went to God. Because at the end of the day, who is really being attacked? Right? When God told Moses, when God told Joshua, go, lead the people, they're going to, when they rebel against you, who are they really rebelling against? God's saying they're rebelling against me. When Satan is attacking you and trying to crush you and trying to crush your faith, especially in the public realm that's going on in the political media right now, it's God that's being attacked. We need to remember that. And when we do suffer for that, our response will either put God on a pedestal or it will put ourselves on a pedestal about how pitiful it is that we, our rights are being refused and we are suffering. So when you do suffer, not only think about the suffering, but think about how you respond will make the difference whether God gets the glory or not. We're going to come back to this in just a minute, but think back to the lady in Kentucky not too long ago that lost her job because she wouldn't issue marriage license to homosexual couples. Right? Think about the response. Think about the worldly response. On the homosexual couple side, everybody's saying, it's my right. You can't take my rights away. I have a right to get married. You can't take my rights away. Now, what did the people that came out and began to argue on her side? What was their argument? Don't bother her rights. She has a right to religious freedom. She has a right by law to not do this, or the bakers who wouldn't create cakes, or whatever the case may be. But again, most of these cases that are coming up in our political society right now, it's why are you violating my rights on both sides? That's not what I want to call a stark comparison to what that and what Peter and Paul did. They made it clear. It's God being attacked, and it's God that is suffering. And if we will suffer that way, we will bring the glory to God. Now, why do we suffer? That question is pretty easy to answer. It's simply sin. Before Adam and Eve in the garden, before they sinned, there was no suffering. It was utopia. It was perfect. I mean, for those that you or your parents' garden, you didn't even have to go hoe weeds in the garden. It just grew. It watered itself from the ground every morning. I had to do nothing but go out and enjoy the fruit. But after sin entered the world, that changed. After the guard was put at the post, the angels put at the post to guard where they couldn't get back into the tree of life after sin. everything changed. The dying process, the aging process started, the dying process started. And through that and through time, we've had genetics, we've had all kinds of things. We're going to die. Something is going to take our life at one point or another. Why do we suffer? We suffer because of sin. Now, is it God's will that people suffer? Ooh, trick question. The answer to that is yes and no. God put science in place. It began at the beginning of time because of this first sin. Is it His will? In the sense that He created the way things work, yes, He put the things in place. Because of their sin, people will die and people will suffer. But the answer that maybe Job was trying to look for at the time that his friends was accusing curse God, or his wife said curse God and die, and his friends was saying, just give up and repent and tell, apologize to God for what you've done. He is every time we suffer. Because God is up there like puppets, saying, I think I'm going to give Josh a little bit of trouble today. No. No. Yes, it is God's will in the sense that the earth works the way it works. The universe we live in works the way it works. But it is not God up there. I'm going to pour a little trouble into the situation here. I'm going to throw a little grief. Is suffering a result of sin? Yes. My sin? Maybe. Maybe not. We talked about it at the beginning. It could be because of my sins. Right? I could be suffering the consequences of sins. I could be suffering the consequences of going out and drinking and doing something I shouldn't do. I could be suffering the consequences of other sins that have taken place in the past. And in that case, suffering could very well be the consequence of sin. But all too often, suffering has absolutely nothing to do with sin. And Paul in the shipwreck, it was nothing to do with sin. It was time and chance, Ecclesiastes chapter 9. Time and chance happens to all. Sometimes we suffer because of someone else's sin that they're doing to us, or just time and chance happens. And the last question I have in this category is, will we suffer? Well, we've been promised, yes, we will suffer. If you're going to be a Christian, even if you're not a Christian, you'll suffer through something in life. But if you're going to be a Christian, you'll suffer, and you'll suffer for Christ. Maybe, you know, I think the generations before myself probably did not suffer as much as I have, and I'm going to. And I can assure you that I don't think that I have or am going to suffer as much as you are. And hopefully this trend will turn around before your children, but it may not. Will we suffer? Yes, we will. So let's begin to answer the question, how do we patiently endure suffering? It's all fine, well, and good to say, Jeffrey, you just need to do it, right? Well, that's good to hear. And it's good to know that, yeah, I've got to suffer, but how do we go about it? Well, if you go back and look at these guys, how did they go about it? Well, the first one I want to say is faith. And when I talk about faith, I'm talking about belief in a promise. Why did Paul know that he was not going to die on that ship? First, God told him he wasn't. Before that, God told him he was going to what? He's going to go to Rome. He's going to testify in Rome. So, is situation horrible that Paul is in the middle of? Absolutely. I tried to show the video to show, you know, we talk about this in story form, but sometimes we need those things that these situations these people was in to come to life to us. He was suffering, but he knew it was going to be okay. Because one, he knew that he was going to survive this because he had had faith in a promise. A promise that God had made him that he would appear in Rome. Now, do we have any promises? We put a couple on the board. What about the Great Commission? Blessed. Right? Blessed are they who are persecuted for my name's sake. What will they receive? A crown of life. What larger promise do we need than that? Right? We're going to talk about perspective next, viewing things from a different perspective. But at this point, just knowing that we have a promise of eternal life, should that not get us through? Let me ask you a question. Are you going to die? Everyone, right? We're all going to face death. Now, there is a promise to each of us that after you die, after I die, if I'm faithful to Christ, there is a promise of everlasting life. with him. Is that a good promise? Is that an amazing promise? Now let me ask you the next question. Does that promise sustain you when trouble arises? Because you know what? When the storm is beating on the boat, or when you're in an airplane and you get that, what feels like a 30,000 foot drop, it's usually about 5 feet, but what feels like a 30,000 foot drop when you hit a good turbulent in the air, is it that faith that sustains me? Am I the calm guy sitting in a bench that says, hey, even at the end of the day, if this plane goes down and I lose my life, so what? What did Paul say about life versus death? To live is what? Christ. To die is what? Gain. Do I have that perspective? That is faith. That is the faith that we must have in order to get there. And the bad thing is, a lot of times we won't be tested. We won't know what level of faith we have in this until something like this happens. And you're put in that sense of panic, and it's like, what will I do? Well, what is the worst that anyone can do to you on earth? The worst they can do to you, take your life. And if you have the right perspective, what is that? A reward, right? But is that easy to get to? No, that is not easy to get to. The second thing that I think we have to do is we have to view things from a different perspective. What is the number one, when it comes to suffering, what do you think the number one cause or the number one perspective that people view things from? I talked about it at the beginning. And once you are a parent and you have a child, you'll understand when it comes to Anna and Lee, there is nothing in this world that hurts me worse than the thought of them being persecuted, suffering, someone hurting them. I've got to know many of you to the point that the thought of someone hurting one of you hurts. But you know what? We've got to view this from a very different perspective. When you look at this from the perspective that at worst case, I die, and if I die, it is victory. What has that done to the situation that you're in? How hard is any situation that you're in, how hard is it to overcome? Not very. Now, how much do you have to, how much faith does it take? How much do you truly have to believe that God is real? And that if something happens to me on this earth, that it is nothing but a hiccup. It's only a hiccup in time until I find myself with Him, right? You've got to believe that. And when these horrible things happen, that's when you'll decide which perspective that you view these things from. But if you think about any of these great people of faith, think about Abraham as he's taking his son Isaac up to the mountain. What's he going to do with Isaac? He's going to kill him. He's going to sacrifice him. Right? Anything more suffering than that? I can't think of anything worse than that. But what does he say as he's going up? When we come down. Right? As he's going up, the last words he echoes to the people that is with him, we're going to go from here, we're going to go up to the mountain, and we're going to sacrifice to God. And when we come back, did Abraham have a clue how God was going to marry, sacrifice Isaac, and the promise that all of these people was going to come through his seed? We don't have any indication that he had a clue how he was going to put those two facts together. Did Abraham believe both facts? He's told me to do this, so I'm going to do it. And he's told me that Abraham was going to be the father. You know, that this was the child. Isaac was going to be the child. That this promise was going to be fulfilled. So I don't have a clue. That is the perfect definition of faith. Don't have a clue how God is going to do it, but he's going to do it. And if I can actually view everything that's happening to me with the concept to live as Christ and to die as gain, then I've won. Jared, not too long ago in a Bible class back here, was talking about he was watching a movie. I have not personally seen the movie Band of Brothers. But they were going into war. And as they were going into war, said that everybody, the struggle was beginning with the fighting. He said, but once they finally got one fact down, we're not going home, right? We're not going home. We're going here into war. We're going to fight this battle. We're going to die at war. He said, the whole platoon, now everything focused to, we've got a job to do. Let's go do it. You know what? We're in a war with Satan. We're going to die in that war with Satan. once we get that perspective, that we're going to die in this war. There's nothing we can do about that. But if we fight this battle, this victory that's at the end of it should sustain us. But it is hard. It is hard. And if you're in a situation where you have a prolonged illness, and I'm not spending near as much time on this, but if you're in a situation where there's a prolonged illness, perspective is everything. Because once again, the whole perspective, if I'm in trouble with a principal, what is he doing to me? Why am I the one being picked out? The perspective turns inward. Why am I? I have my rights. I shouldn't be here. I shouldn't be in trouble. Or, why is this great disease happening to me? I don't deserve this. I don't know what I'm going to do. Or someone that I'm caring for, right? And day in and day out, that's easy to stand here and say. But when you go for months, day in and day out, caring for someone who's sick, or day in and day out, fighting a disease that could mean your life or your death, you know what? It begins to wear on you. The only thing that will save you in those situations is view from a different perspective. I know that there is conditions, there are medical conditions that hinder us from, you know, depression and different things that hinder us in this aspect. But a lot that we can do simply by viewing it from a different perspective to say, at the end of the day, we're all going to die. And whenever I do, victory has come, right? The most power that the world has is death. That's just the beginning for the Christian. A view from a different perspective. And something else that Paul had to realize, especially when you start thinking about something that is a long outstanding thing, Paul had to realize something. He said, I went to God and I asked that this thorn in the flesh be removed from me. What was God's answer to him? Since people mouth it, my grace is sufficient for you. What do we get on the other end of persevering through trials? What's another promise that we've been given? When you go through trials, it will produce what? Patience. Very good. It will produce patience. What a horrible way to get patience. You know, if you think about it for just a minute, what a horrible way to get patience. Some illness, some sickness, some major suffering that's going to take me some time to get over. But after you're on the flip side of it and you're looking back, hey, I did that. That's the recovering patience. Think about Job for just a minute. How horrible was it what Job, we know the story well enough of Job and what happened and how he was afflicted in every way imaginable. While this was going on, do you think it was painful? Absolutely. Pain, the sores. His best friends turning their back on him and instead of being an encouragement, telling him, you've sinned. Now, picture Job in paradise for 1,000 years and let's ask him the question again. How hard was that to endure? Right? Once again, kind of going back to that little bit of perspective. But when you're looking back on that thing, or if you was to ask Paul, what did you suffer for Christ? He told Ananias when he went to tell Paul what to do to be saved, back at the beginning in chapter 8 and chapter 9, go and tell him, Ananias, I don't want to. Have you heard what he's done to the church? Go, tell him what to do, and I will show him the many things he must suffer for my name. And then by the time we get to his later writings, anybody remember some things in the list of what Paul suffered? We got shipwreck. We got stonings. What else? He was beaten. Think about it. And all of those things that he suffered, if we was to fast forward several years and ask him, how hard was it? You know, at the point that he's looking back on it, did it produce patience? Yes. Did he realize in time that his grace was sufficient? Yes. Now, as we close out today, how did people normally respond to religious persecution? We talked about a little bit the lady that was in Kentucky. What did the media, what did everybody turn the situation to? She was either going to have to give the marriage license or lose her job. Well, and the media jumped on both sides. Some was on the rights, hey, the people who want to get married, they have rights. You can't take those rights away. And then the rest of the people jumped on the side, she has her rights too. We're taking her rights away. Can anybody give me an idea? Y'all haven't been a very talkative group. But can somebody give me an idea how she could have responded, or anyone could have responded, that would be a little bit more like what some of these biblical characters responded? Think about it for a minute. You're in that situation. You're about to lose your job, or you just lost your job, and media is throwing things in your face right and left. And the whole thing is about how you're being mistreated. You know, when Peter, when Paul had these situations, they turned the situation back to, you know, look, yes, I'm going to lose my job. But there's other jobs. I believe in God. I believe in Christ. And He will take care of me. I'll find a way to take care of my family. But the thing we need to be upset about here, do you see how the world is attacking Christ? This is what needs to be brought to the forefront. Christ is being attacked. Satan is using media. Satan is using government. Satan is using politics. Satan is using everything he can in order to attack Christ. And if we suffer because of it, how we respond? We will either elevate ourselves. Hey, I've been cheated. I have my rights. I don't deserve to be treated this way. Or I'll elevate Christ. Look what we're doing to Christ. Look how, as a people, we are rejecting Him in His way. And I truly believe that when we face trial, we're going to do one of two things. We're going to highlight, we're going to elevate, we're going to glorify God in the name of our title today. Or we're going to elevate ourselves. And if we've elevated ourselves and how it's not fair that I'm suffering, how much glory does God get? Okay? But if in this, if I find a way that yes, I'm suffering, it's okay. Do you know what Christ suffered for me? The great example, He went to the cross and suffered, and He did nothing wrong through His entire life, went to the cross and suffered for me. It's okay if I have to suffer a little bit for this. If you're that calm voice of reason, that person with a look of an angel on their face, the calm person in the midst of the storm when everything is going south, and you can look and say, it's okay, God's in control, then I think you'll have it. Survey the book of Acts sometime. How did Paul respond? How did Peter respond to these trials? Just do it. Look through and look every time that they're put in prison. Did they ever highlight themselves? Well, every time we do it, every time we go through this, we've already talked about this, but every time we do this, we're going to show to everyone around us that God is more important than anything that could happen here on earth. Every time you patiently endure, you'll say, eternity is more important than anything that I might suffer here. And if we can go away and say, instead of saying, woe is me, instead of saying it's someone else's fault that I'm in this trouble, instead of being depressed and recluse and drawing into our shell or complaining about it, if we can learn to rejoice that Christ, but we suffered for Christ's sake, we will stand out in the world. We'll stand out very different than the world we live in. Here's a few of the examples, but I would like for you to look for as many as you can. Because this is something that don't come easy. This is something that takes some time. We started with it, we'll end with it. What a sad situation it is that if one who obeys the gospel, and I have a room full of people, many in this room have obeyed the gospel, but if the cares of this world, at the end of the time, if the cares of this world drag you down and choke out your faith, I can't think of a sadder situation than the one who once had it to give it away. Thank you for your time and your attention. Is there songs or a break?